April 13th, the year 3030.
Why do you think the United Pacific Armies waited before invading the territories outside of the cities?
Silence hovers in the air above the class as our instructor, Professor Melton, waits for someone, anyone, to raise their hand. I look around. My classmates are mostly younger than me, and only Liam and Stella are around my age. A lot of them were recruited early in life, right after their teen years. While I've found that the younger generation absolutely dominates over us in the physical classes, us older three, all sheriffs from outposts along the coast of the UCOA before coming to the Constitute, seem adept at using our added years to dominate the academic sphere. All three of our hands shoot up at the same time, having given our younger classmates ample time to respond. Melton nods at Stella, who is sitting right in front of me. Her dark hair is bound together at the nape of her neck. She straightens as she begins to speak.
Well, after they had decided to combine forces to cause destruction of the cities.
Ultimate destruction, and we are still not sure how they did this.
Melton interjects, pointing a finger at the class before he nods for Stella to go on. After they used ultimate destruction to destroy the cities and their newly formed army invaded the Major 10, it didn't make much sense to branch out right away. She straightens up further, the vertebrae of her spine pushing up against the fabric of her green Constitute jumpsuit as she speaks, her whole body tensing. They waited because they knew that the Civil War wasn't over yet, so they just let them kill each other and then swooped in at the end to build their colony. She looks down at the desk before her.
The people living here really were quite stupid. It's like they wanted to be taken over.
At this, Melton sighs.
Yes, it would appear so, but looking back almost 1,000 years later, it's hard to know exactly what happened. And you have to remember, Stella, on the ground, things don't always look that clear. And let's not forget.
And here, he smiles a mean smile that makes my stomach pinch.
Those stupid people. Those are our ancestors. Technically, we are those stupid people.
But not anymore.
One of the younger recruits, Blake from the Delta team, blurts out, wanting to contribute.
The breeding program enacted by the United Pacific countries made sure only the smart people would survive.
Melton grimaces, as this fabled breeding program is a part of the historic record that is often discounted as myth. But I can't help but wonder that perhaps because it is us that would have come from this controlled breeding structure, we choose to not believe in its cruel existence. As the ones who tell our history, we don't want to believe in such inhumane practices of our past.
Yes, Blake, that is an interesting point.
Professor Melton holds his grin in place, as if it is a shield.
But let's not jump ahead, shall we? Speaking of the ancient colonization of this country, please read Chapter 7 in your textbooks. I will be quizzing at random next class, so please come prepared.
He clasps his hands together and stops smiling. There's a collective groan, and then a loud beeping sound starts to echo from the speaker in the corner of the room. Professor Melton stands and gathers his things, and there are several minutes of pandemonium. Things are being thrown across the room. There's loud, excited banter until their next class, Modern Enclave Genetics of the UCOA, begins and Professor Franklin brings them to order.
All right, young minds ready to be molded, she announces as she strides in.
We all sit back and pull out our notebooks, getting ready to scribble away. Franklin clicks a few buttons. Unlike Melton, she prefers to use the more modern projection screen. Today, we're going to talk about an enclave that is about 500 years old.
It occurred when several people from the northern coastal regions ventured out into the Forbidden Zone and headed west, and subsequently landed in a region about a 14-day journey from here. The projector flickers for a second, and then an image appears on the screen. What the people who went west past the border didn't realize is that they were all carrying the same genetic mutation, a mutation that made all their offspring shorter in stature as their generational line continued, and as the mutation was perpetuated due to the genetic bottleneck they created by splitting off from the rest of society and starting their own tiny colony. Who can tell me what a genetic bottleneck is? Someone raises their hand. From far away, I can hear Blake say something about genetic proclivities to make you thirstier. Franklin looks at him in confusion for a moment before Liam answers the question correctly.
A genetic bottleneck occurs when there is a small offshoot of people that only interbreed with one another, thereby creating a tiny gene pool that can sometimes bring out traits that would otherwise be diluted within a larger gene pool.
His voice sounds far away as I realize I knew the answer, but I can't stop staring at the picture. My arm remains glued to the desk, my hand sweating against its cool wooden surface. The image on the screen is that of a woman, with a very short, very muscular torso, riding a giant horse, and after staring at her for a long moment, I realize that I've stopped breathing. So that's where you are, Marnie. I think to myself, you and your bottleneck of daring, courageous people. I can't say I'm surprised by this. Not only short stature was captured by them and perpetuated, but gumption and sweet loyalty, and I have to close my eyes to push out my thoughts of Stalford, of the friends I made there. I need to be here, be present. I need to focus. The rest can wait. When there's time, I will think of them then. Everything has turned out so different than what I thought it would be, from what I thought when I first came to this place.
You all right?
I open my eyes and Stella is staring at me with her giant brown eyes, her general worried expression even more so. Of course. I smile at her, and she rubs her cheek as if there's something dirty on mine, not breaking eye contact, and so I do the same and wipe away the tear.
Just homesick sometimes.
I whisper back and rub my forehead, and she smiles at me in understanding. Stella was a sheriff in the outpost just above New York, and there are rumors of a man left behind, a choice to come here rather than to stay with him. It must have not been easy. Professor Franklin goes on to describe how some of the enclave that, over the years, have ignored the orders of Gara to remain out of the Forbidden Zone and have traveled outside of it and have adapted to their new surroundings. The Plateau people, as they call themselves, began taming and breeding horses they encountered in the wild. Since they were short and quite muscular people, they made for excellent equestrians, and even though they weren't tall, they were strong enough to master riding very large horses, and continue to breed horses that became larger and larger as they grew shorter and shorter. My notes pick back up around here, slightly smudged. My brain has felt like a balloon since arriving at the Constitute. It appears that there are an endless amount of things that I don't know, that I couldn't have known. The Constitute is not what I thought it was, not at all. It doesn't have the power that everyone living in the United Cities of America thinks it does. It's merely a tool. Powerless, really. But there was no way for me to know that when I was asked to join, when a man appeared at my house the day I buried my stepmother, Prudence. If you're law in the UCOA, being tapped to join the Constitute is usually a pipe dream. But here I am, after packing up little else than a change of clothing and riding my horse Moon to meet the man dressed in his green uniform at the gates of my outpost.
Since coming here, I haven't been in contact with anyone from home, from my old law office. We're cut off from the outside. Even if we weren't, there simply hasn't been time, not once, this entire year that I've been here. Since walking into the classrooms of this place, I have been fed so much information that I feel like I might burst at any moment, like my life before coming here was a strange dream that I stepped out of and into real life.
You want to go get dinner?
Clancy sidles up beside me as I stand up at the end of class to gather my things. I can see Liam from across the room, grouped in with his alpha team. It's kind of an unspoken rule, but generally you hang out with your own team. It helps build communication that you can then use during the missions and later in the field, though none of us are told exactly what the field entails. Sure. My eyes are still fixed on Liam, who is talking to Trellin, who is smiling at him like he just told her something very incredibly wonderful.
Earth to Rose,
Clancy says, and I make myself look away from Liam and back at Clancy. He smiles, but with a wincing, like I just pricked him with something tiny and very sharp. Yeah, let's go. I pull the strap of my bag higher onto my shoulder, glance over at Liam one more time, and then join my team as we walk out of the room. The grounds of the Constitute campus are astounding. Even now, as I walk along the long corridor and out through the front doors onto the long, drawn-out grassy lawns, it takes my breath away. They told us that it was built in the style of an ancient school, that a lot of the buildings look like what were once referred to as castles, which in turn are something even more ancient. It's hard to keep track sometimes of what is old and older. But the large gray bricks are beautiful and make up most of the buildings, and the sheer height of them, the complexity of their ceilings and spiraling stairways within, took me weeks to get used to. But now, a year later, I walk easily along the paths that line the lawn outside our main class building. I no longer steal glances at the patches of grass where strange flowers are growing that I've never seen before. I don't marvel at the giant clock tower that sits in the middle of campus as I pass, or gape at the cycle bikes as they pass by me. I've managed to blend in. Some days, I even feel like I belong here. In turn, I can now tell who the newcomers are, just a year behind us. Eyes wide as they leave the classroom building to walk along the green, neatly cut grass. It's possible their world has just been dismantled in a 45-minute class on false gods, or ancient cities, or how this place came to be, and the sacrifices and the lies that have to be told just to hold it all together. But our group, our year, doesn't have that look anymore. And we stroll easily to the dining hall that lies a few-minute walk to the east. It's fairly warm for April, and I pull my overcoat off, letting the sun warm my shoulders and the back of my neck. Despite the constant exhaustion that is making my body throb, the classes all day and the trainings and missions at night, life feels pretty easy in this very moment, and I inhale the sweetness of the flowers that scent the air.
You look happy.
Clancy sounds surprised. I think I am. It's just so nice out today. I inhale and stuff my sweater into my bag.
It really is, isn't it?
Clancy brightens and pulls off his own sweater, letting it hang over his arm. When we get into the cafeteria, it's loud and bright inside. People are streaming in from all over. From their classes, and the older recruits from what we've heard them describe as simulation trainings. Even the two classes ahead of us seem to stick with their assigned groups. Despite of this, the structure at the Constitute is extremely loose. You are here until you are chosen, which usually happens sometime between your second and fourth year of your training. It has its ups and downs to be chosen on the earlier side. You get to go out into the field sooner, but you also effectively miss any training you could have received later on. Considering how much I learned, I secretly hope to stay as long as possible to milk this place for all it's worth. We stand in line and get our food, some sort of root vegetable with boiled fish. Despite its seemingly endless amount of knowledge, the Constitute has not quite figured out how to feed us anything that tastes decent. Memories of the rivers and ocean in Stalford hum through my mind, but I focus on the mush before me as we sit down at the round table. I can't believe the first round of missions is over next week, Layla says and runs her scooper through the white slot before her.
We better win it. I've heard rumors that Rustin always makes the last mission count triple.
Triple?
Clancy grimaces at Poppin's remark.
So much for our lead actually being a lead.
Whoever wins the final round wins the year, I guess. There's unintended finality in my voice that makes me sound like I begrudge this fact. And maybe I do. He didn't even have to leave me in that bedroom. I think to myself, if this mission is triple points, it will not have mattered who won the last round.
Yeah, but who knows?
Clancy tries to cheer me up, realizing my shift in mood.
Maybe he won't make a triple points.
Well, even if he makes a double, it's still going to be down to this one. Otherwise, what's the point? We've already won. Aileen, the youngest member of our team, says, and she's right.
Technically, we're not supposed to be keeping track.
Clancy, ever the rule follower, says, but his voice is that of insincere duty, as if he simply feels that someone ought to bring it up. Aileen rolls her eyes at him. Please, it's the only way we can keep it up. She's smart for her age, I realize suddenly, as if I haven't been around her for the duration of an entire year. Without the competition in the missions, it would be hard to get psyched up. Hard to get out of bed some mornings. So grueling are the missions on top of the classes and the strange trainings they make us do. Poppin says, not really paying attention. His hand is resting next to Layla's as they sit next to each other, their pinky fingers touching ever so gently. This kind of thing isn't frowned down upon. It's pretty natural for people on the same team to start seeing one another, or whatever you want to call what we do while we're here. We all know it won't last, because none of us know where we'll end up being assigned. Now that I think about it, I have no idea where I will end up going, or Liam, for that matter. I do a quick take of the large open space around me, tables filled with different teams, talking loudly, baiting one another. I see the Alpha team off in the back corner, but I can't tell if he's with them. It's possible Liam and I will never see each other again once either of us gets called up for duty. Once we're assigned to a real mission out in the world, or for a post somewhere they won't even tell us we're going until it's our last day here.
He's not over there,
Clancy says under his breath, and raises an eyebrow, a playful smile hovering around the corners of his mouth. What? But I don't try to deny it, not really. I focus back on my attempt at a meal. Have you guys read ahead at all in ancient history? I started reading chapter 10 last night, and I don't know, it was so strange, I couldn't put it down. Aileen says suddenly, playing with her water glass, holding it, and letting the liquid inside glide to the left, then to the right. I mean, where I'm from, it was really hard to get offspring approval. Aileen is from north of Boston, one of the most northern outposts in all of the UCOA. Not much grows up there, and it's very hard to get approval because it's so remote. I remember there was this one woman in my outpost who applied like 7 times.
Even her husband was begging her to stop. Aileen stops tilting her glass. Apparently, if you apply more than 3 times, they start to take some of your rations as payment. As in, if you have extra for a child, then this shouldn't hurt you. Of course, it was only done to discourage from reapplying after being denied so many times. Aileen looks up at somewhere above my head, like she's remembering something from far away from here. After the 7th time, she stopped, and for a while no one talked about it anymore. It was a small outpost, maybe 50 people. She shrugs as if to say, "People talk when there's not much else going on." And then, lo and behold, Aileen lowers her voice here, her eyes widening, like new secrets are about to be spilled out onto the table. She starts to show.
Show what?
Poppin looks at Aileen in utter confusion.
Show as in as she started to show she was pregnant,
Clancy clarifies, sounding impatient. But now we are all leaning in towards Aileen, willing her to go on, including Poppin as he catches on to the meaning of it. All of us have heard of someone defying their child application, but none of us have ever heard of an account firsthand. And in my head, all I can hear is the same thought, banging against the walls of my mind, like it's trying to shatter my skull. But Gaara said only if the earth can sustain a child. But Gaara said only if. But Gaara said. Gaara said. Gaara said. Gaara said. But of course, here. Now, there is nothing that Gaara actually said. A myth, a fiction, something we will learn about in depth when we get to chapter 14 of our ancient history textbooks, though we've all read ahead, at random, like Aileen did last night, because when we arrived here, none of us could believe what we were hearing. Even now, it's hard to shake her. Hard to shake the goddess I worshipped my entire life. This thing, this fiction creature that I was told to strip from my thoughts, to end my worship to strip from my very being as soon as I came here. Like it's that easy. Like you can just tear something like that away after years of believing, really believing in it. To all of us, it felt like the top layer of our skin had been ripped off. Leaving us not just naked, but bare, vulnerable, and pained to the touch of this new, strange world. I continue to pray to Gaara for months, purely out of habit, my lips moving in the dark as soon as my head hit the pillow, until one night, out of nowhere, I simply forgot, and then I never remembered to do it again. But what happened to the woman? Did they notice she went against orders? I ask Aileen as we stare at her in suspense. One night? She presses her lips together as if she doesn't want to speak the words. One night, she just disappeared.
Did she ever come back?
Clancy asks, worried for this woman he has never met in his life, because of course he would be. Oh yeah. She came back all right, but she had gone completely insane. Aileen looks down at the table, and I can't help but think that she regrets it now, starting the story she can't stop telling to completion without being hounded. She wasn't gone long, a week maybe, not long enough to have the baby. She presses her fingers against the edge of the table, lifts them up, as if she's trying to pick up unseen specks of dirt. She wasn't that pregnant when she left, just barely enough that you could tell. And when she came back, Aileen's fingernails are white as she presses them down harder and harder. She would put rocks into a cloth sling and carry the sling around town as if the rocks were a child. She would sing to the rocks, or get mad at them when they were fussy, when they let out wails only she could hear.
For a moment, none of us know what to say. Every one of us has wrapped our arms around our bodies, as if a coldness has crept into the cafeteria, one only we can feel.
What about her husband?
Clancy asks, as if trying to bring the story to some sort of closing, to bring us back to a warmer place.
Nothing. He just went on, let her carry the rocks through town. There were stories that she would bring the rocks to bed when she heard them cry from the other room at night. But nothing else happened. She never applied for another baby, a real baby. She didn't get pregnant again. She was happy with her rocks.
Gara.
Poppin lets out, quietly, and we all shift uncomfortably in our seats, but don't say anything.
I wonder what it's like to have a baby, even if you don't want it.
Aileen says, shaking her arms as if trying to shake off the memory of the woman and her rocks.
Do you think that it really played that much of a role in the Civil War of the 21st?
Layla asks, clearly trying to move away from the topic of crazed women and their rock babies. Her and Poppin are no longer holding hands, I notice.
I just can't see how it played that much of a role. Especially since they had so much extra food.
Aileen says quietly, but slowly breaking out of her own spell.
Well, they only had food for a little while anyway,
Layla adds, and again we all stare down at our own horrible food, and despite the famines of the past, we find ourselves unable to eat it.
You guys going to a funeral later? Who died? Did I miss the announcement?
Liam is standing next to me, looking at us like he's not sure he wants to stick around.
Sorry, we were just talking ancient history and we got really into it.
I laugh, but it comes out tinny and strange.
Well, good thing it's ancient history, right?
His joke is lame, but all of us smile and loosen a bit.
You want to come to the library with me?
He segues, and I nod, picking up my tray.
Yeah, sure. I need to study for a bit before mission training tonight anyway, and I could use the walk.
You don't want to study with us?
Clancy asks suddenly.
I mean, we have to find each other for mission training anyway. It just makes sense, wouldn't it?
I smile at him.
That's okay, Clancy. I'm sure I'll find you guys. And I don't think tonight is going to be that intense.
What is it? Some sort of surveillance gear simulation we have to do? I'll meet you guys there.
As we walk over to the front entrance, Liam is strangely quiet. And he's still quiet as we take our seats at a table in the way back of the library on our favorite floor, and still quiet once we've pulled out our extinct animal species book.
You do know we're not actually going to a funeral, right?
I try to pick up his joke, but he just shakes his head.
Sorry, that guy's just so shameless.
Liam says and looks over his shoulder like Clancy has followed us here.
Who, Clancy?
You do know he likes you, right?
Yeah, so?
It's kind of hard to miss, but it's not like it matters.
So you don't like him back?
Liam seems uneasy, questioning.
Why? Just because he likes me? No, I'm not 6 years old. I don't like someone back just because they like me.
This seems to ease Liam into a calm mood, and I tell him the story that Aileen told us at dinner about the woman who went crazy when she couldn't have a baby.
That is very sad,
Liam says, and for a second he seems to go somewhere else, just like Aileen did.
But then again, an unwanted baby that is brought into this world could be just as punished.
Punished?
I look at him, confused.
What punished babies is he talking about?
Nothing, never mind. What are you writing for question 4? The one about the dogs? How do you say that word?
He trails his finger along the page, as if trying to distract me. But then I tried to find question 4 and realized there is no question 4 in this section. And then Liam is kissing me, as we're sitting there behind the bookshelves, and I wonder what happened to all the dogs, or however you say it.